Schools Administration will come to order. Hope everybody's late spring, early summer's going well. Okay, and I think we will, we got two agenda items. Let's discuss the travel portion first. I think we want to look at this. Actually, it's committee work plans memo and travel on the back. Why don't we look at that memo first? And the work plans is very typical to what we do every interim. You know, it's not hard and fast, but we're trying to get the committees to kind of tell us what they're thinking about so that we can make sure the budget's fit and so forth. As I understand it, the only thing that is different on the reimbursement is authorized as follows area is the specificity of putting in on the second to the last bullet, majority leader, assistant majority leader, president, minority leader. That specificity was not there before. It just kind of was assumed.
Someone just thought.
Otherwise, that's pretty
boilerplate,
that side of the sheet. Any questions on the... And I think there's been some spotty work by the committees that's actually given us information. And hopefully we'll get that work there. There's no sense in the committee of work the job to us if they're up there with it.
Mr. Chair. Could someone just explain the last bullet, travel days to and from the Capitol, versus maybe all the rest of the bullets? And it seems like that's fairly wide open for any senator. Or am I misunderstanding?
How is that then?
It basically was we have past experience has been for the outside members that have long travel days as they come back and forth. If they only are able to have the day they're there, as they come back and forth, the those days should also be included in that.
How is that? Okay. Is that
whereas correct? Somebody coming in half, you know, if you're not outstaying and it's a quick trip, you wouldn't, obviously, the day before, you wouldn't need to be coming to.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. I understand.
It's just a matter of kind of on either end if people are coming.
Yeah.
If you've got a 8 o'clock committee meeting,
yeah.
You may have to come.
Be right here somewhere.
Right.
And then you would be there.
We maybe should just clarify the language.
How would we clarify that?
Mr. Chair, to me, it just, you know, travel, I mean, that for me could be today, just as I read it. Having it explained, I understand.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we've been operating under this, so.
Yeah.
Okay, do we need actual confirmation by the committee that this is what we're doing, or just for information purposes?
I would vote it will be adopted.
Senator Metzen moves adoption of committee work plan reimbursement is authorized as follows sections of the memo. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion adopted. In-state, out-of-state travel, second page. Ms. Helgen, is it what's new here, or is this pretty much what we want to do in this worksheet?
Yeah, I think
there is. Ms. Nguyen? Wait, grab a chair.
Why we need that? We don't need that.
Oh, it's on the spec site.
Oh,
for the most part, it's all the same except for the third paragraph. Recommended guideline. That's the only change from previous memos.
Okay. Has that just been more informal that there's been an attempt to kind of limit it to one? Or?
Yeah, and I think it came from, as we had talked about it, cases, a lot, every senators right now are all serving on an NCSL or a CSGP. Some of these meet multiple times, many of them do. So it was just from, as a general rule, I just wanted to be able to have something that would be a guideline that says, you know, basically, if you're looking at each year more from a budgeting standpoint. Now, if there's many exceptions, depending on how many senators are given stipends or, you know, they're given money to attend
scholarships.
Scholarships to attend conferences, so that's obviously something different. If there is a reason, particularly if people who are chairing committees and that kind of thing, that they have to be gone. The other piece of it, we may at some point need to look at our travel budget and decide to do something different.
Mr. Chairman, I have some concern with limiting that to one trip, particularly if there's a member who has been appointed to and serving on a CSG or an NCSL committee. And my limiting strictly to one trip per year might limit their effectiveness of being on those committees and their ability to participate in those more national forums. And I have also a more specific second concern of how this would be applied if we would adopt the one out-of-state trip. Suppose a member was on a CSG committee, for example, so they were going to go to the National CSG Committee. But then also suppose, just as an example, they were on the Senate Environment Committee here, so they've gone to the CSG annual meeting. But then there is a conference, say, on VHS in Detroit, Michigan, where all of the legislators from the Great Lakes states, were going to have a conference to talk about how we might work together to control that fish virus. And so it would be authorized to attend that by the Environment Committee rather than by the Rules Committee.
Why don't we take that sentence out?
Okay.
Why don't we take the third paragraph? Let's just take the first sentence out.
I don't have that.
Leave the budget as all.
Chairman, I would think Senator Senjum and you could operate as kind of a gatekeeper for that too. If a member is, and he might not be the most popular doing that, but
right now, but, Ms. Newman gets blamed.
But if a member just seems to be going to conferences just to go to conferences and doesn't have any kind of an official position, that you would start raising some questions about it.
Just for members' information, on a personal level, what I've done over the years is I've really not gone to conferences unless I've been on a panel or something. But having said that, I'm a big proponent of members attending things that could help improve their knowledge and information. And it's always hard to judge whether a member, I mean, who can make the judgment as to whether members are active participants or just a traveler. And I tend to always think you should err on the side that's, particularly for new members, they're learning a lot of things that could be really helpful.
Cameron, I think look at patterns. Sometimes I don't go at all, but if there's something that's really good, I'd be like to, and there may be two in a year. But I usually try to find it when it's on somebody else's dime. You know, if it's
and members aren't good at that. They have many requests where somebody has offered to pay part of their way and stuff. So my experience so far has been, by and large, most of the members are pretty good in terms of reasonable in their expectations and requests. The other area that I think we probably should ramp up a little is some of our high-level professional staff, I think, should get a little more exposure nationally. I think it would help in their work. Anyhow, I was just trying to give you my sense of it.
You're taking the whole paragraph out?
Yeah.
So why don't we...
rather than being on a case basis?
Well, we better leave all requests will be considered on a case basis.
Yes, I think that's smart.
So let's just take off that first sentence, and we'll just assume that first sentence is off of there. How about the rest of it then? Ms. Newland, could I ask, does that give you heartburn for us to take that out? You do get blamed now. And for the record, if you are mad about not getting a trip, it is Ms. Newland. No, in total truth, at the end of the day, it's the buck stops, and we try to use some judgment. We do have some eager members who have had some no's.
So, Mr. Chairman, it may be complicating, but registration fees often cover some meals, and you have a statement that said per diem must cover all meals. So how are you going to figure that one out?
I think they've been back and forth on this over the years.
Senator Fogelmiller, and Chair and members, we have gone through this many times, and so often they're really good about going to a conference, they're taking out those meals and kind of pinpointing just exactly how much money went to meals, how much went to registration. So very good about that, breaking it out for
us. So, Mr. Chair, so there, you're expecting a calculation of that, so that you wouldn't be paying the entire registration. You have to divide up the registration fee if that's calculable, or are you talking about any additional meals beyond the registration fee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, what usually happens is they'll give us a set rate for the registration,
yeah,
and they'll bill us accordingly, and so often they'll write in there that maybe three meals were at just $20 a piece or something, and we will take that off. But usually the registration is separate. That's for the most part what we do.
So I'm trying to figure out the mechanics of that. So when you pay that, then you've got to let people know so that they, in fact, as individuals, pay, go and buy the tickets for the meals, if they're choosing to go to the session meals then. I've never run into this policy this way before.
Yeah, but it's very few and far between.
Because oftentimes it does. There are a number of meals that are part of the conference registration. I've never run across that being separated out and having to figure that out of per diem before, if it is in it. Because I think it probably varies with conferences, by conference. I mean, I'm not objecting to do this. It's a mechanics thing. I'm trying to think of how that would work. But.
Ms. Newman.
I think it also means that if the registration won't pay for all meals, sometimes it's just a breakfast or
that's
sometimes
true.
It's just a lunch, and you would then have to get dinner individually,
mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't be reimbursed on top of the per diem for the meals.
If that's what you mean, that's exactly what has been the practice before. Mm-hmm. There are some meals that are often included that are part of general sessions, but they're not all. But this, your last statement said the per diem must cover all meals. And that's the line that
meals?
Then somehow contradicts.
Take that line out.
Okay, let's take out the per diem must cover all meals.
Or all meals not a part of the registration.
I'll just take this off.
I'm not tracking why this sentence needs to be there at all.
Because we've never been able to ask for reimbursement of meals.
I don't know why the sentence is there.
It doesn't seem necessary. The sentence doesn't seem necessary.
It truly doesn't, no.
Okay.
There's a travel request form in which there's meal request reimbursement. It's technically just for staff, but I have seen senators fill it in, and I think they think that they get the meal right. I think it's the form.
Mr. Chairman, why don't you revise the form so that isn't confusing? If it needs a special one for staff, so be it. But then.
But we have a clear understanding that it doesn't. It's not a twofer.
Right.
No. Yes.
So let's just take the sentence out. Yeah, that's very okay. So the remain portion, are we okay on? Senator Clark moves the second page of the draft memo with those two deletions. The third paragraph, delete the first sentence, and the fourth paragraph, delete the last sentence. Discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Okay, thank you. Mr. Boomhauer.
Yes. Mr. Chairman.
Why don't you just give us a little history?
Members of the Rules Committee, since the LCL National Conference and State Legislature has been involved in a major compensation study for the Senate. They draft their results up, and what we wanted to do today is give an overview of their findings as they relate to the Senate. And I've got some handouts here for the committee members that follow this presentation.
And Mr. Boomhauer, it's 2/7 of the report was received in February.
Yes.
And since February, the internal MAC committee, MAC stands for
Management Advisory Committee.
And the members are?
The members are Joanne Zaw, Faye Sparks, Dan Wolf, Michelle Kelm, Pat Blavin, and myself.
Okay.
Well, not a member, but I participate.
You staff it, or
yes.
And that group has been talking about the recommendations back and forth with NCSL, trying to work with the recommendations and trying to come up with a plan of action for the Senate.
That's correct.
And somebody had complained February, March, April that the report had not been made public, and that was because it was an internal document, so that we could internally work with our professional staff to figure out where we're at. Other than our MAC committee, our professional staff working on this, there has not been a tremendous amount of discussion among members on this. So this is a pretty unvarnished presentation you're going to get. I am, and I think Senator Senjum, are vaguely aware of where things are in terms of the discussions that have gone on the last few months. We were updated by our staffs, but not in any level of great detail. There is a recommendation from the MAC that, depending on how our discussion goes here, we will either go with it today or not. So that's where we're at. Mr. Boomhauer,
thank you. What I'd like to do here is just review the general results of the study here. The scope of the study was to compare the Senate job classification and compensation system to multiple governmental entities around the Twin Cities, as well as other branches of government, the executive and legislative judicial branches as well. The NCSL used a variety of surveys. They used 8 different surveys. They took a look at the compensation practices in the House, the LCC, the judicial and executive branches. And then they also broadened that by taking a look at other governmental units, the MEP Council, U of M, the League of Minnesota Cities, and the Association of Minnesota Counties. And they also took a look at some private sector data for some of our positions where we're highly competitive in the private sector, accounting, the IT area, and so forth. And what they did is they benchmarked about 60% of our jobs to the labor market to find out where our salaries were with respect to the labor market. They reviewed our range structures, and they took a look at where our jobs were placed in the ranges, and also they took a look at some of our benefits. Now, our benefits, for the most part, tag on to the state benefits, but one of the thoughts sometimes is that because there's a perception that state benefits are great, that salaries can be low to offset of that, and sometimes they talk about that as total compensation. And in reviewing the benefits, they found that there's a number of benefits, particularly short-term, long-term disability. Most employers do pay those benefits for employees, and in the state, that's not the case. And because we tag onto the state benefit system, that's the case with us. But I think what the benefit review showed was that, you know, the benefits are not Cadillac benefits that would offset any lower wages. So that was one of the findings of the committee. What they found from the standpoint of our salary structure and salary ranges is that our ranges are low and non-competitive with other governmental branches, and we lag about 10 to 23% other governmental branches. Another finding was that our range structure was too wide from minimum to maximum when compared to the government and the market, and I'll talk about that in just a few more minutes. And then our actual salaries lag government and the market. So not only are our ranges low, the actual salaries are low as well. And again, the disability benefits are, the payment of that is employee funded and for the Senate and state employees. And a lot of other jurisdictions, those costs are picked up by the employer. And then they also found that certain jobs were improperly placed within ranges. So those are some of the general findings of them. We also have a practice here in the Senate of starting people in the lower 10% of the range. And that's really not competitive with the House or the labor market. And relevant experience is really overly discounted in the Senate. For instance, with most employers, you take a look at their total experience and then plug them into the range accordingly. And in the Senate, there's been a formula that restricts where people are based upon how many years House experience they have. That doesn't equate to Senate experience. And there's kind of a formula that does actually work at keeping people in the very bottom category of non-competitive ranges. And that's where the multiplier effect of this thing has really picked up. Also, there's an overall lack of a compensation philosophy and plan to periodically review the ranges and the jobs. The last time this was done was 7 years ago. And since then, it's been kind of passing on general increases that other groups have received to the Senate, and not even every year does that happen. So that is kind of, from a broad perspective, where we're at. They have some very specific recommendations that they came up with. One of them was to adjust the ranges to reflect the market rates and shrink the range structure from right now, they're very broad ranges, from 66 to 134% of the midpoint. Now, the midpoint is the rate, the actual rate that if you were going to hire somebody out in the marketplace, that's the going rate for a fully qualified person. And our ranges are 66% of that midpoint, which would be a 100% midpoint. So you can see by having ranges that are that low on the low end, and starting people in that low part of the range, that it creates some real recruiting and retention problems. In fact, every exit interview that I've had since I started in October, compensation uniformly came up as one of the main reasons why people were dissatisfied with the Senate and why they were leaving. So one of the recommendations is to make our ranges more realistic. Typically what you find in a range structure is ranges that are 80 to 120%. That would be cost prohibitive for us to have ranges that are that narrow. So what we thought that we could do is maybe tighten that range a little bit more on the bottom and shrink it to 72% to 130% of the range midpoint. Anything beyond 100% is over the market rate, but that recognizes the fact that there's kind of a clear track for employees and recognizes longevity and so forth. So that's why that range spread is 130%. For the most part, most of our employees are well below 100% of the range. So people are clustering in that bottom tier of the range structure. Another recommendation was that we adjust the ranges annually to ensure that our positions are pegged to the market. Typically, every year there's a range movement that reflects what's going on in the marketplace, and usually that's about 3% or so. That's pretty much what it's averaged over the last few years. And one of the recommendations is that we keep some sort of sanctity with our ranges and our market midpoints, so we really know where the labor market is at any one time. Now, whether we follow that internally or not is another matter, but we can really know where the labor market is, and then we can better ascertain where we are. Another recommendation was that people that fall below these range minimums as a result of adjusting these ranges from 66% to 72% of the minimum, be brought to the range minimum of their classification. And then there was the issue with the current employees that are in the ranges. If we bring the people that fall out of the ranges to the minimum, there's a compression factor that affects the rest of the employees. How do we deal with that? And the recommendation there was that we provide equity adjustments to address compression problems between new hires and tenured employees. And these recommendations are fairly standard. I've worked in compensation in the public and private sector for about 25 years, and none of these are rocket science or far out recommendations. I mean, typically these are the types of things that you do see happening with ranges that aren't maintained and so forth. It's just something that it's kind of like the Mr. Goodwrench commercial that they used to play on TV. If you do the preventative maintenance, you don't have to spend as much as letting things fall apart, and then there's a big cost to fix the major engine problem, for instance. That's kind of the same thing with compensation. Another recommendation was that there be some grade level adjustments to some of these highly market competitive positions in the IT, accounting, legal, fiscal analyst area. There, it was very apparent that our salaries lagged the market significantly, and there needs to be some adjustments made in that particular area. Finally, that from a recruiting standpoint, that we have the ability to recruit up to the range midpoint or higher if a person has superior qualifications, but again, not try to recruit within the lower 10% wherever possible. And that would just give us a little bit more flexibility as opposed to the self-imposed program that we have right now, being very narrow in terms of how we look at experience and so forth. So that was yet another recommendation. So that's pretty much the framework that the NCSL gave us to work with in the MAP. And that's, you know, we studied these recommendations long and hard. And as a result of that, you know, we developed a framework, I think, that we can deal with some of these issues that we presented.
Okay, members, we have 214 employees.
Actually, the number is down to 204 right now.
204.
Yes.
Okay. So we're in the scheme of things, we're a fairly small employee group.
And
I think, Mr. Fulmauer, did you just say that we have not been doing, for the last 7 or 8 years, we've not been doing the year-to-year maintenance and putting the oil in the engine and stuff that we should be doing?
Probably not as much oil as was needed. There were some years where employees didn't receive any increase. I know other state employees, I think there was a freeze for a couple years, but the issue there is that they have step increases that we don't. So, the Senate employees really, and House employees too for that matter, suffered as a result of really not having step plans and so forth. And our practice of starting people so far down in that range has just exacerbated that problem. And one thing that was not done is that when ranges were adjusted, they arranged the top end of the range, in my understanding, was adjusted up, but they kept the bottom of the range where it was. So employees will continue to be brought in that artificial role. Great.
Questions by members in terms of what the NCSL workforce? Senator Cole.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fulmauer. You indicate the last study done was about 7 or 8 years ago.
Yes.
Was that an NCSL study?
No, that study was done by, I believe, McGladrey and Cohen.
Okay. And then there was the NCSL study in 1995. So is there a repository where we're keeping these studies of every X number of years?
They are being held, yes. We do have a record of those other studies.
Okay, so you do have the 1995 study?
I wasn't aware that there was
a 1995 study.
I was just going by the information that they presented
to us in their
findings.
It was issued in September.
There was a study available.
Okay,
so where is it?
It's a good question. I
have to look.
What is the question?
Well,
whether there is a 95 study or not, is that the question?
Well, there was. The question is, do we have a copy of it? And can we keep copies of these studies so we're not reinventing things every 5 years or so? Is there a place where they can be kept either in the secretary's office or your office? I know there was a study. At one point I had it 12 years ago. It was issued, I think, in September, October, November of 1995.
Okay,
can we get you a copy of it or something?
I don't know if I have it anymore.
Take it out for a minute.
Mr. Chairman, I can look for that.
Sarah Coleman, would you like a copy of it?
No.
We will get you a copy of it.
Mr. Chairman, I have some sense of it, but it would be real nice if we could run this place where we keep track of these kinds of studies every several years so we're not losing stuff, and then we bring NCSL in 5 or 6 years and redo everything all over again. So it'd be nice if for once we could keep track of this stuff.
Sarah Coleman.
Yeah.
Is this an issue that you think whoever made the decision to commission this latest study shouldn't have done that? I'm just trying to get at where you're going here.
No, I just, like any, Mr. Chairman, like anything in terms of research, treatises, whatever, it's nice to have a record.
Sarah Coleman, I believe we have a record. Are you suggesting we don't?
No, I just asked, and I'm not sure we do.
Mr. Chairman?
I asked a simple question, just do we have
Mr.
a copy
Chairman,
of it?
Senator Cohen, there is a history file up in the files there where past studies are kept. So if there was one in 2005 or whatever, it should be
Mr. Chairman, I was on the Personnel Subcommittee for a number of years, and I know we did one, I'm not sure if it was, this was NCSL that was involved in it, but it was largely, I think, a restructuring of job classifications. I don't remember that the focal point of it was, well, we dealt with compensation when we made some of these changes. I don't recall that they did an actual compensation study, but I could be wrong.
Ms. Selner. Ms. Goff, I'm sorry. Tell us what you know about.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I've been on the management group for a long time, and
Ms.
we did have a
Ms. Goff, why don't you go ahead. Sir Cohen, things change so much around here. I'm always struggling to remember this.
Mr. Chairman, we did have NCSL came in 1995 and did a very comprehensive study where there was a reorganization, restructuring of the job classifications and the salary ranges, and it was a very comprehensive study of both the compensation and the structure. The job titles and job classes were all reviewed. And then in years since then, we've had a number of studies that have focused on particular areas that have been much more limited in scope. We had a study, one or possibly two, of the IT area. Mm-hmm. We had one that dealt with fiscal analysts and council and legislative analysts. But this is the first comprehensive study of all the categories of Senate employees since the 1995 study.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's helpful, and now what Ms. Zoff has indicated is that there are more studies, so it would seem that rather than just kind of groping in the dark, that as we're working on this, as Mr. Boomhauer is working on it, that he have access to those studies to see where we've gone and what direction we should go in. I bet that's the way they do it in private business.
Sarah Coleman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, these studies do age and become out of date. Jobs change, the ranges change, the market changes. So really, past studies are helpful from the standpoint of how the jobs were grouped, generally speaking. But even as the labor market changes, those groupings can change. And, I wasn't here when we started the study. To what extent they looked at the past data, I'm not certain on that. But, they did come out here and interview a number of managers, is my understanding, in the process, and reviewed, the job groupings that previously had been set up. And for the most part, kept those job groupings intact. I think there were only 15 positions that changed job levels as a result of the study. So, the work that historically has been done wasn't discounted, but certainly the salary ranges and those types of things would have been outdated over a period of time.
Sir Clark?
Mr. Chairman, members, just to add, in the original NCSL studies, one of their conclusions was that it's just a good human resources practice to keep revisiting the salary structure and reanalyze the market every several years, and we really hadn't done that on a comprehensive basis in a period of 11 or 12 years.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Cohen, I just wanted to reinforce, I guess, that point. Generally speaking, the best practice for nonprofits, let alone for-profits, is to reevaluate and do these kind of studies every 2 to 3 years. And a fair amount of federal grants actually require comprehensive market studies. And while it's interesting from a historical standpoint, usually that data isn't very relevant to moving forward. It can be a helpful thing in terms of what kind of questions have been asked in the past, so you can eventually do some comparison. And hopefully NCSL does that. But I think it's really important that we start doing this on a much more frequent basis.
No, Mr. Chairman, that's helpful to know what the history has been. I know this study started, about a year and a half ago? Is that when NCSL was first contacted, or 2 years ago, Ms. Off? Just the past year? Okay.
Just the year, 1 year, about a year ago.
Okay. Good enough?
Yeah.
We'll sit down.
About the report?
Where you're going on vacation?
Yeah. Summer movies.
So just a recess. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Yeah,
you don't have to.
Golf tournament.